For those of you who haven't met me before, I'm Phil. I'm one of the feds. I guess this is my third time up here. The reason they asked me to come and talk to you is a couple reasons. One of the things that I do professionally is try to protect the infrastructure, the IT, and weapon systems for U.S. Army. I work for the Army Chief Information Officer, and my job is to do information assurance, policy, program, architecture, acquisition, and finally implementation to the program managers across the Army, wherever we may deploy or wherever we may have a presence to protect our systems. I started this business about 27, 30 years ago, where my greatest enemy in protecting my systems was the evil empire. Concerned about the Soviet Union and Warsaw Pact, those kind of folks who had a substantial capability to take our systems out or listen to them or exploit them. I'm a veteran of Vietnam, and I'm also a veteran of the Gulf War, and I am very aware of what can happen when people listen into your system. In Vietnam, we used to be very concerned about something called imitative communication deception. And if you haven't seen the history films, I suggest you take a look at them, because it hasn't changed all that much. Whether you're getting into a system today and looking at data, or you're listening to a FM, AM radio channel, such as we had in Vietnam, listening in to where the next helicopter drop zone was going to be, or where the next landing zone was going to be, or next pickup, it was all information gleaned. What they used to do to us in Vietnam was capture or listen to our radios, on secure radios, I might add, listen to a 10-digit coordinate in which a helicopter would come in to pick up people or to drop people off. And the folks on the ground would radio back to the helicopter pilot or the team chief and say, "Hey, man, land where I pop yellow smoke." Well, guess what they would do? They would hear that, and there'd be two areas on the ground with yellow smoke. And it was a 50-50 chance that the helicopter would land in the right place, and if he didn't land in the right place, he was received with direct or indirect fire. That is real cyber warfare starting back in the mid-60s. Those kind of lessons, I tell you, have not lost themselves in the business that I do today. I'm here today, if you read what's on the agenda, to talk about patriotism, morality, ethics of hacking, and so forth. But I must do a disclaimer right off the bat. The rest of my presentation of the speech I'm going to do today is my opinion. It is not the opinion of the U.S. government. It is not the opinion of the Secretary of the Army, or certainly the opinion of the Army Chief Information Officer. It is strictly mine. I want to, first of all, thank the organizers of DEF CON for inviting us out here. This is a great opportunity for us. We've interfaced with a whole lot of you all out here, picked up a great number of tips, and I think after yesterday's Meet the Fed panel, we are a little more sensitized to some of your concerns as well. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today, and I hope that I made the right decision by leaving my Kevlar at home. Actually, I was at DEF CON last year, as I mentioned, and I was pointed out as a Fed in record time. Carl Lewis had nothing on me on this one. I guess I must have been either the cowboy boots or the Just for Mangel, so you can't tell. But I will tell you, I did get a haircut for you guys. You're welcome. So anyway, since I couldn't hide anymore, and I do appreciate and understand the value of what this conference does and can do, and what you bring to the industry and community, and the impact you have on the government, I just simply said, okay, well, I'll be a speaker this year. Before they let me come up here, though, they warned me not to bore anyone to death, not to get on my military high horse, and at no time and under any circumstance was I to be allowed to make any reference to Anti Online or a guy named JP. However, I think Peter Shipley and I could talk about some things after the conference as well on that. There are a few things I want to say today, and after that, I'll point out, if you haven't got your T-shirt yet, a lot of my coworkers are in the audience here. And I'm rather proud of the feds that came out to this conference, because they're harder to spot than they were last year. There is certainly a multi-talented group of individuals gathered here today, a group that many profit-seeking computer security headhunters would give their firstborn to recruit. And I've talked to many of you. The best of the best in the elite, there's no question. Computer security companies have probably approached many of you, and I know that some of you are even now currently employed by some. The irony of that situation certainly hasn't missed any of us in the Department of Defense or the corporate world or the FBI or a number of other people who find it hard to accept that the very people who stir up the coals are the ones getting paid to put out the fires. Couldn't that be compared to hiring a thief to install a security system in your home? Would you appreciate his expertise when he comes back 3 weeks later and relieves you of that stereo system that you just procured? Hackers working for computer security companies, what a combination. You know, they say that a large percentage of criminals return to prison after being caught continue a crime using many of the new techniques they learned while they were in jail. These people that lived in the environment consisting of all the expertise in their career field. Criminals meet criminals. Wouldn't a hacker working in a computer security company be almost the same? When they're hired to work for these firms, isn't it like being a kid in a candy store? All the latest and greatest tools, technology that they've heard about, but didn't have access to, or maybe didn't have money to buy right there at the fingertips. Can all hackers honestly say that they wouldn't be at least bit tempted to do a little vulnerability testing on their own once they were on the inside? This was discussed yesterday during the Meet the Fed panel. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that everyone would do it, but I am saying that there's a certain percentage would consider it. And that is a big percentage that most employers don't want to risk. Many of you may say I'm stereotyping, and not everyone with a hacking background does illegal hacking. And that if they did, it doesn't mean that they would continue to do it once they were hired to work for the good guys. But smokers, dieters, addicts of all kinds will tell you that it is a lot harder to change away life than it is to give in to the habit one more time. Before I go, let me make something clear. I'm not labeling all hackers as criminals. I'm saying that criminals are criminals. If you haven't been caught for breaking the law, and if you have been caught for breaking the law, you're a criminal. If it is your passion and pastime to poke, prod, dissect computers, computer code without breaking any law, then you're a technician in high demand. When it comes to the military, we have enough problems to worry about without adding convicted hackers or criminals to their payroll. And if you believe what you read in the papers or see on TV, I'm sure most of you would agree that we just don't need any more trouble than we have. And isn't it ironic, if you will, when we had the conversation yesterday about doing a little vulnerability analysis just to show people how well they were insecure, that someone took down the DEFCON homepage. And if you haven't seen that, you need to take a look at it. So you do yourselves, and that's kind of telling. On the other hand, there's no question that we would benefit from hiring people at the level of intelligence expertise that these people have. Script kiddies excluded. It's no secret that the biggest obstacle the military faces in its efforts to run cybersecurity race is a lack of well-trained people who are always committed to the longevity that's required to complete this important task. Dr. Honker, Jeff Honker, was here on the platform with you yesterday from the National Security Council, spoke about implementing initiatives that would keep that technical staff in place at least a little longer. More money is a great starting place, and that would also enable us to compete for personnel in other corporate contract, some of our friends, which we call Beltway Bandits, be able to get those folks into the business. Why do hackers hack? Well, we consistently hear about the part of the hacker culture that claims that they do it for the good of computer security, and that pointing out vulnerabilities in other people's system is a good thing that educates the victim about the gross lack of their security. If they should happen to delete or alter a few files or alter a home page while they're at it, then so be it. I may not lock my door every night before I go to bed, but that doesn't mean that you're invited to come in and help yourself with my belongings. That's the same rationale that I use for people who use that argument. What about repercussions of these lessons? I can think of a few situations that are near and dear to my military heart. What would happen if a hacker broke in through it and called it an education to make an educational point and point out vulnerabilities in the system that controlled the stocking and shipment of medical supplies to our troops abroad? Is it worth the lives of our countrymen to have bragging rights about owning someone else's box? How funny or educational would it be if a shipment of weapons meant to protect our homes and families were replaced with packages of terminal underwear? There are a few well-placed keystrokes. These things are all possible, and they are of great concern to me. Is everything justified in the name of education? I think not. Then are those hackers who group themselves as hacktivists category? Hackers against child pornography, hackers against war, and so on. It is an honorable intent that they feel strongly about these issues, and a lot of people share those concerns with them. Hackers want their voices to be heard, that's clear, but it is illegal to penetrate the best, and it's illegal to penetrate, and is that the best way to speak out? Have hackers stopped to think how much good is being done by their actions? Listen to what I'm thinking. How many children have been saved from the sick cruelties of child pornography by defacing a homepage? How many soldiers have been kept off the front lines by taking down U.S. Army homepage? They also make the assumption that large numbers of people see these altered pages. But a message put up at 3 a.m. and taken down at 6 a.m. probably isn't going to be seen by influential political audiences, and they presume that it probably won't be seen by a lot of other people either. True, many sites archive these pages, which give them a lot more exposure. But if exposure to the evils of child pornography is the goal, then why not put up your own websites dedicated to saying child pornography is bad, instead of risking legal actions by tampering with someone else's? I'm certainly no expert, but I probably guess that writing a letter to a congressman or a senator or other local officials might get the ball rolling a little faster than a web page full of misspelled curse words. I can't help but think of how much work could be accomplished in the fight that could be won if hackers would mobilize their efforts in certain other directions. If they put up as much organized effort in riding a bike to work or not littering on the highways or carpooling, conserving energy or recycling as they do in illegal penetrating of other people's systems, we would certainly have a better planet to live on. If they put their considerable computer expertise to work in training, research, development facilities, we might even have shopping malls on the ocean floor, or could be talking about putting condos on Mars. Right or wrong, hasn't changed much since the beginning of time. And I wonder if hackers have stopped to consider the people who are being affected directly or indirectly by their evil deeds. You think about the system administrator who will spend for days repairing the damage that was done, or a small business owner who may have to close down because he can't afford to restore the data that was destroyed. Take the Citibank incident, for example. Even though most of the money was recovered, a fairly large chunk was not. Why, or who do you think paid for that loss? Do you think Citibank just chalked it up to the old well factor? Or do you think that the taxpayers, consumers, including the culprits, paid? As the saying goes, no good deed goes unpunished. What you do takes talent, patience, perseverance, determination, and a low-end computer with anything but an AOL account. What you do gets attention in the media, the military, your peers, and even the FBI on some occasions. What you do gives jobs to system administrators, network administrators, virus detection companies, software engineers, teachers, students, and lawyers. And all this is remarkable.